Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup. Hello and welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily podcast episode. What is it by now, Tommy?
It's about 14, maybe? No.
No. Isn't maybe it? 10?
Feels like 14.
Yeah. Well, funny you should mention that because I'm sitting here with a glass of wine this evening for a chance and you're on the waters. What's the reason behind that?
I've been on the waters all day. I mean, it is hot and sweaty over here, just trying to rehydrate. Nothing more. That's a beat up. Nothing else to that.
Is that why your voice also has a peculiar timbre?
It's actually very noisy in this city and you've got to yell a lot to try and, you know, get out. There's obviously karaoke bars as well, but, you know, haven't ventured to any of those yet. So, look.
I hear it's particularly noisy in Roppongi.
Is it?
I hear it is.
You tell me, Robinson. Ooh, okay, here we are, podcast. Let's get into it. What'd you do today?
I got on a Shinkansen, a bullet train, which is a unique Japanese experience, up to Kumagaya, which is about an hour and a half's drive northwest of Tokyo. I think it's still considered to be in the greater Tokyo kind of district, but it's where Uruguay's been based. They played Georgia there, and of course Australia play Uruguay on Saturday down in the south of Japan in Oita. They had an open media day, so I thought I'd jump on a train and go and chat to a few Uruguayan players, because before Japan and the Brave Blossoms stole the limelight with their win over Ireland, the first upset of the World Cup was delivered by Uruguay.
How good was it?
They beat Fiji by 3 points.
Shawny Maloney's Incredible was fantastic after full time. Enjoyed that.
It was very good. So I had a chat to them and asked them, you know, whether it had changed anything for them, that win, and, you know, why they then lost 33-7 against Georgia only 4 days later. So
yeah,
That's a big giveaway there. I spoke to their inside centre, Andres Villaseca, who is only 27, but he's playing his second World Cup. He's the vice-captain of Uruguay, and his brother, there's a couple of sibling kind of, they're the Duplessis or the Franks kind of sibling version of Uruguay. His elder brother was the captain of Uruguay at the last World Cup, which
right.
was, and Australia played them then, and both brothers played together. But the elder Villaseca has retired, and now it's just this young inside centre. And he was a great chat, actually. He told me that he likened it to a revolution in Uruguay. He said it, you know, it'd been amazing to kind of get that win. He said we knew we could do it if we did everything right, but no one at home expected us to. So it's been really huge. And he said, particularly, you know, there are people kind of stopping other people on the street to talk about it. It's kind of being talked about on the streets of Montevideo, and he said that's really unusual for a country utterly obsessed with football. So that was really cool. One of the really interesting parts of our conversation, because he's a 12, and they also, you know, do that kind of 10-13 or 10-15 playmaking combo. So as a 12, he's a bit like Karevi,
yeah, right,
in the ball carrying regard. And I said, what did you make of that call on Karevi, that penalty that's obsessed Australia, you know, the penalty call that stopped a nation? Which one? Keep hydrating, Tommy, that's all I'll say. And he said, he didn't actually see the incident. He said they actually haven't watched Australia Wales because their game was so soon, so close to it, but their analysts had sent the clips through they had to analyse, and they were about to leave for the airport to fly down to Oita, so that was kind of next on the agenda for them. Anyway, and I said, oh, well, you know, what about this? What about this issue about the ball carriers and leading with the forearm, and, you know, it's kind of taken everyone by surprise in Australia and apparently in the Wallabies camp? And he said, oh, no. I mean, he giggled and he said, it doesn't really affect us. We're kind of too small to make that a danger, but that's been, we were kind of, that was brought up At the start of the tournament, at the big refs meeting with all the with all the national coaches, so we knew that they were going to be looking out for that. And I was like, really? Because the Wallabies haven't talked a lot about that being raised as an issue, but they were certainly quick to bring up Steve Hines's comments in the same meeting about allowing, you know, just allowing the game to go on and discerning between rugby collisions and sort of rugby incidents. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. I've written a bit about that tomorrow. But he said, you know, we're too small. You know, we're not the size of Samu Karevi. So, and he's not small. I mean, I'm 6 foot tall and he's taller than me.
Yeah, right.
I guess he's just not built like a Pacific Islander. So he said, we have to carry low. And I've put a photo in the story with him exhibiting exactly that technique against Georgia. He scored their only try, actually, that consolation try. So one to watch, I think.
Interesting what midfield combo the Wallabies will roll out to. That's coming out.
What are you hearing?
Honestly, it's pretty tight-knit at the moment. I would be surprised if they play James O'Connor again at 13. I would expect Tevita Kurundrani to get some minutes there. I think that would be clever to do. Not a bad time to do so. Your number 12, maybe. I mean, you could even move O'Connor into 12 if you wanted to and rest Samu, given that he's, you know, the role that, you know, he's played. He's had two big games already, a lot of tackles, hit-ups, obviously. Look, that'll be out on Wednesday for a team, a slightly earlier team announcement. I went down to a bit of media at the team hotel today. A few guys up, Nick White was interesting as well. He talked about why this was a do-or-die match, and like obviously it is now, you know, given the Wales result. Talked about how the gap's closing between Tier 1 and Tier 2 nations. Uruguay have only played Australia once, 65-3 at the last World Cup, as we know, in the pool stages. Will it be that one-sided? It could be, it should be, but look, who knows? And look, they know that if they stuff up by some way, shape or form, then their World Cup's over. So, look, you would expect them to pick a slightly stronger team than perhaps they would have maybe, you know, had they not gone down to Wales. The back row too, like, been so much talk already, you know, before the World Cup, endless stories on Hooper and Pocock. They've wedged them in there together in that back row. But is it the best combination going forward? We haven't seen them as super influential at the breakdown as they were in 15. Perhaps between the two of them, there's only been three turnovers in sort of the two games thus far. We know
And Tolu Latu, can you tell us about what Tolu Latu said today? Because he's actually, you know, he's a hooker, but he's a ball pilfering hooker. He's been known to sneak a few at the breakdown as well.
Yeah, so I mean, he's obviously comments have a lot of merit too, because he's sort of that third veteran, if you will. Mm-hmm. On the field, look, he talked about how it had actually been quite hard for Pocock, and he was asked about, you know, Australia not getting as much pay there at the breakdown from the refs, and the perhaps not being a bias, but a little bit more lenient towards the attacking team. He's talked about saying it's really hard. Even Poey is struggling to get on the ball as well, and he's one of our best. Seems like the refs are really not giving away much penalties at ruck time to the person pilfering. You have to survive probably too clean, and it's a fair bit of time in there. And then he talked about being obviously the time wasted in being in bottom of a breakdown and getting back in the defensive line. So I understand that. But if you're playing both of them, you miss a guy like Lucan Solokoloto, who can bend the line. That's been how they've gone for the test leading into the World Cup before Pocock came back for the Samoa test, which Hooper was rested for. And obviously they've started both games at this World Cup. Maybe bench one of them. You'd split it for 40 each just to keep them minutes under them, you know, in their belt.
I'd love to see Jack Dempsey on the field. I'd love to see him get a World Cup cap. I feel like against a Uruguay or a Georgia, by no means pushovers, but I'd love to see that kind of mongrel in the back row, that ball-carrying mongrel. But I also, you know, we were starting to see some really great stuff from Lucan Salakai-Aloto. That's pretty interesting.
Jack Dempsey would be right up there on my list of blokes I would not want to tackle. I cannot tackle to save my life. Let's just get that out there on the record. But Taniela Tupou up there as well. I don't know. Who do you reckon you could tackle?
I haven't really thought about that, actually. haven't spent much time in my years writing about rugby thinking about which one of them I could take out or clean out in a breakdown. But that actually brings me back. That breakdown talk from Tolu brings me back to this conversation about with the Uruguayan centre, Villaseca, he also said the other issue that they were all told about that came up at this meeting was the breakdown, and that the clean outs had to be legal. So there was a real, there'd be a real focus with refs and assistant refs and TMOs looking at whether guys were cleaning out just with their shoulders, or whether they, you know, they need to kind of have the arms involved there. So probably means that it's still worth going in over the ball, because you may get something there anyway, even if you're not getting the ball.
Of course,
testing people's discipline and their technique. And aren't we all about technique at this Rugby World Cup?
Oh, absolutely.
Tackle technique, carry technique, breakdown technique.
As Tolu also mentioned, he said, and maybe dropped a hint when he said, you know, what he said, Poey on the weekend, whether that's a suggestion that he is going to be starting. Not quite sure whether Tolu meant that or whatever. But look, he did say, look, knowing Poey, he'll go out there and make six turnovers, and it's a non-story. But
that's true.
Yeah.
But my God, we'll beat it up for the next 2 days.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we'll have a team Wednesday, which will be interesting. Talking about interesting, Ardy Savea.
Yeah,
what's doing there? You wrote a bit about that today.
Yeah, the All Blacks sort of decided to get in front of this one, and it's a crazy story actually, and crazy because so Ardy Savea has turned up at training this week wearing goggles.
Obviously not swimming goggles for the people who haven't seen the photos.
No,
right?
not swimming goggles.
They're not your normal looking goggles. Is that a fair call?
No. I guess not.
Like when I think,
but goggles. I don't know why anyone would think that Ardy Savea at the Rugby World Cup would be rocking up to training wearing swimming goggles. But hey, I do like that we're going back to the fundamentals of journalism and not assuming prior knowledge. So we don't mean swimming goggles.
I've never seen anything like it.
So they're basically prescription goggles, and they're glasses, but they're goggles because they have to sort of be soft and molded, because one of the issues was that they couldn't kind of cause damage in a collision or a tackle.
Yep.
But he needs them because apparently for the past 2 years his eyesight has been on the decline in his left eye. There were no details of what the condition is, but, you know, he's had some blurry vision, and it sort of got to a point where he and the doctor have had to kind of come up with a workaround, and that is these goggles. And luckily World Rugby had actually endorsed a model of goggle, and they've since cleared it for use in all levels of the game. But doesn't it beg the question that if Ardy Savea hasn't been able to see, hasn't had 20/20 vision for the last 2 years, like how goddamn accurate and ferocious will he be with goggles?
I'm assuming he's been wearing contact lenses, or like, what do you?
You're right. That's a good point. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe the contacts just weren't doing the job, or it was hard to tell actually. But I did actually. It could have been that he is now wearing goggles to actually protect the eye, so he doesn't kind of cop any contact to the eye or any kind of, you know, accidental contact. I'm not sure what the specifics are there, but that's kind of the impression I got, that maybe it's actually not for vision, but maybe more so for protection, because he made the point that he's got a daughter, they'd like to have more children, and it's sort of about, you know, longevity and the rest of his life more than it is about rugby games. Yeah.
The All Blacks will play Canada on Wednesday evening, and then from there Thursday Georgia, Fiji, and Ireland, Russia as well. Johnny Sexton back in the Ireland side, captaining the team. Thoughts?
We heard. Well, Johnny will be happy. We did hear that. I didn't know this about Johnny Sexton. I mean, all you see is this, like, just clinical, metronomic. I mean, he's got a bit of spice to him for sure, but apparently when he wasn't selected last week, not even in the 23, he was quite, what's the word
salty?
Of the day? Salty.
Great word.
Yeah, kind of. I like filthy still better, but more better.
Livid. Yeah.
You know, to the extent that he kind of was turning up late to a session and then, you know, like refused to put in his GPS, which is really a really interesting insight into that ultra-competitive and slightly petulant temperament from the peerless Irish 5'8". But he's back in, so that'll be good. And certainly a test of his fitness, because that's been the cloud over him, his fitness.
Remember Michael Checkett saying that when he had him at Leinster, he just, like, telling Johnny Sexton, you're not playing, is just a very hard thing to do, understandably.
Right, well, there you go. Yeah, there you go. That's why. And there's just actually Uruguay, you know, you and I have always talked about like Uruguay and Georgia weeks being the quiet weeks when we can kind of get into some other interesting stories. And one of the things I reckon I'm going to have a crack at this week is what I learned today is that Uruguay in their preparations for the World Cup, I mean, those got Uruguay is semi-professional. Mm. They don't have a professional club competition. But this year, after qualifying for the World Cup by beating Canada twice, they actually sent 10 of their players over to the United States to play in Major League Rugby, the new pro comp, which is in its second year. So I think that's really interesting, and I think later in the week I'm going to try and write a piece about the rise of the Americas, which, you know, is definitely kind of bubbling away because Uruguay just beat Fiji. They beat Canada twice, and while they may not be expected to beat Australia or Wales, Australia and Wales certainly know they can't take them lightly. And I just think there's something really interesting happening in North America and South America.
When you talk about new marketplaces, obviously Japan World Cup, the influence that's having here. We know France World Cup in 2023 will be there, but North America, if World Rugby do go down that path, they did host the World Cup for Sevens as well. So look, funny things have happened and Australia would miss out.
Yeah, so Australia's announced their intention to bid for the 2027 World Cup, but it looks like Argentina also wants it and potentially the USA. And, I mean,
Gus
knowing
Pichot
how...
Gus on the phone.
Exactly.
Making deals, yeah.
And knowing how World Rugby weighs these things up, I mean, they're in Japan for the broadcast, for the eyeballs. That's why they're in Japan. For the eyeballs and the market share, and you know, every man and his dog wants to crack the Asian market. Every code is trying, the AFL is trying, for God's sake. So there's an Olympics obviously in Tokyo next year, but I actually think, you know, Australia's a legacy rugby nation by now and has a saturated market, and Argentina, while potentially a growth nation and certainly still on the rise in the world rankings, has a pretty cactus economy, would be an amazing World Cup, don't get me wrong, but I just think the shrewd kind of number crunchers at World Rugby might look at the US of A and say, pick up the phone and go, gents, do you need a bit of a hand with your bid? They actually wouldn't do that, but I reckon the USA is the smoky to host the 2027 World Cup. We know the 2023 World Cup is in France. So anyway, we'll get into that a bit later in the week and see what we can drum up and dig around and find. But
yeah,
it's an interesting storyline given Uruguay's upset win over Fiji.
To round out the podcast, it's definitely worth mentioning.
You're trying to shut me up, decent?
Am I? How long are we going? That's all right.
You did host a podcast on your own last night because I had a day off. And as producer Dave said, it's really difficult to talk to yourself for 15 minutes. And you did it so well.
Oh, jibber, but
no wonder you never
had
mind.
had a few shandies last night, perhaps. Sad news though, overnight with Jeffrey Sales passing.
Yeah.
Randwick legend, stalwart, been at the club since he was 8 years old, played a test for the Wallabies in 1967 versus the All Blacks, has been ill for a while and passed away peacefully on Monday evening. So
we've devoted the cauliflower to him tomorrow and tributes to him.
Yeah, there's some really nice stories in there. You know, Simon Poitevin, a number of former Wallabies and teammates and guys who have had anything to do with him and the club, you know, and Sydney Club Rugby. Like, he's not just, he just goes broader than Randwick, doesn't he?
He does.
So some nice words and thinking of his family at this point.
Yeah, and you can read all of those on the cauliflower. But Tommy, you look like you need a really spicy bowl of ramen. So I just think...
Do I?
I think we should probably... or a bed. It's been a long day for you, son.
It has. We got there. Thanks for listening, rugby fans.
Thanks for listening, guys.
We'll...
rate us on iTunes.
Yeah, we've got a few ratings. We're going okay. Okay.
I'm not convinced it isn't the entire staff of the Sydney Morning Herald and the Deeson and Robinson families. But anyway, we're really appreciative of your support. And and endeavour to continue to bring you some intimate insights into life on the road covering the Rugby World Cup.
Glorious, always. Thanks for listening. Catch you later.
Sayonara.